This is Music for the Quarantine Soul, and this is episode 7. And today we have a little different scenario as well. We've got a father-son combination, an old friend of mine. This is Bob Clark and his son, Mac. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome to you. Well, thanks very much.
And my navigator, Clifton, is enjoying the Northern Lights here on Zoom once again in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, in the back seat, causing trouble as usual.
Only Clifton could pull off Northern Lights at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
I've got a special pass for that.
You've got a magnetic personality that just attracts them, I think. Okay, so with our father-son episode, we actually have 10 albums to cover. Bob has selected 5 and Mac has selected 5. So we're going to try to keep a limit on how much talking we do here so people aren't listening for 4 hours. So let's just get right to it. And we're going to turn the radio dials over to my friend Bob. So Bob, give us 1 of your 5 and let's go.
All right, I'm going to go back a ways. I'm going to go back, and one of my favorite albums from growing up was actually Look Sharp by Joe Jackson. And I know that probably it comes from 1978, 1979. And I think the well-known song that was on it was, Is She Really Going Out With Him? So that was the big song on the album. Yep. I hadn't heard anything by it. I came out of the disco era. Yeah, I know I'm dating myself, but you know, I got to about 78, 79. There was either that or there was kind of California rock going on at that time. So I liked the Eagles and, you know, I was coming out of the Bee Gees. And then all of a sudden I heard this, this punkish sort of thing going on, I guess they called it. And with, it was just really different. It was just, you put it on, all the songs were only about two, three minutes long, but there were a whole pile of them. And as well as Elvis Costello, there was this guy, Joe Jackson, and he always wore a suit. Nice suit, black suit. He had a nice tie going up on stage. But by the end, whenever I watched the concerts for it and so on like that, by the end, the shirt was always pulled out. And, you know, and he was, although underlying everything, the songs were fantastic. They were fabulous. And the guy was such a good musician. Like he was a classically trained guy. So,
right.
You know, he came from wherever it was that he took his, I think it was jazz roots. He had a lot of jazz roots, but yes. He had kind of moved it over to punk and he had made it very, very popular between him and Elvis. They were Elvis Costello at the time. They were kind of the big punk guys
at the time. Yeah. Lots of reggae influences on this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's definitely a cool little listen. I think I certainly heard the hit song. I look back. I don't think I have this one on a cassette, but I've certainly heard bits and pieces.
I had it on 8-track.
Oh, did you really?
So mine was 8-track. And it's funny, it was my older brother, he's 6 years older than I am, Don. And he passed along. When you guys asked me to come on, I started thinking there was a lot of his influence on it. Because by that point, he was sick of those albums and he was sick of that stuff. Whenever he did it, he wasn't one to kind of keep his albums real close to him. He would pass them along. So I always thought it was really cool. And I remember him buying a whole pile of 8-tracks. So you'd hear the song, right? And then you'd have to hit 4 buttons to see if you could play the rest of the other side to get back to the song you really wanted to hear. And then there were a pile like that, right? But this was one where I didn't have to do that because all the songs were really good. Like One More Time was really good, or Throw It Away was really good. And even the Look Sharp name of the album song was just really strong. It was all upbeat. It all kind of got you dancing around. So I imagine there's a lot of times that I would have been embarrassed by the amount of dancing in the house I was doing, hopefully all by myself.
I've seen you dance, Bob, and you've never looked embarrassed.
No, you haven't. No, you haven't.
I'd like to know Max's opinion on his dad's dancing.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No comment there.
Okay. Yeah, maybe it's better we don't go into that.
as soon as you said 8-track, you reminded me, I'm sure you listened to this then, in Kingsley Lee's 77 Mustang with the 8-track, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine. So loved 8-tracks because you got the main track on the one side. And as the tape got thinner and thinner, you heard the back. They only put the other 4 tracks in the back of the original one. So you'd start hearing the other song in the back, if you can listen really closely, oh, really? Hear the other song coming through. So, you know, you hear, is she really going out with him? Look sharp, look sharp, look sharp. You really didn't get just the one song out of it. But yeah, it was pretty good. It's probably one of those ones. It was different too, right? I could have put those other ones, like the Bee Gees for my disco era or something like that. But that was one that all of a sudden, I always go back to it. You know, every couple of years, you know, I'll go back to it and I can play it from beginning to end.
And have you upgraded from 8-track? Like, do you own it on cassette, say?
Nope, still an 8-track guy. No, I kind of went through everything, right? I kind of went through that cassette thing. So I had it on cassette. I wanted that. And then I ended up buying it on album. That was something new.
Yeah.
You know, got it on the album. And I still have that. It's still in the shed. You know, getting warped away in the shed with the rest of my albums.
Hopefully it's vertical, Bob. It's not flat, is it?
That's right. Yeah, definitely. I keep it vertical for sure. Rather than it looking like a big C, it actually looks like the letter I.
Well, Clifton and I have a few albums, so when you're ready to get rid of a few, we'll, you know.
It's one of the other ones I'm going to discuss later. I thought was really kind of special with regards to the album too, but I'll get to that then. But
okay.
Yeah, I'll probably hang on to those ones.
Going back to that phenomenon of hearing the flip side track on the tape, I wonder if that's what started off sampling.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe that's kind of neat.
Like, something's getting put in there.
Yeah. Extra.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, right?
Like, so this guy was a London guy, right? Like, he was from England.
Yeah, definitely.
Doing a little bit of research, he had said the New York that I knew. I guess some of the songs were inspired by living in New York, but he goes, he's living in Berlin now, and he goes, the New York that I knew in late 81 and 82 is gone. So I, you know, like how you guys, you fellas were starting to talk about how Nepal has changed. I guess, you know, geographically a little bit there, but I mean, just when you're in a certain space and time, how that that can influence you and the stories that you have and that you come up with. And so that's kind of neat.
That's very.
I think, Clifton, I think you're right, because by 82 he comes out with like Night and Day, which has Stepping Out on it and Breaking Us in Two. It's a completely different sound, right? It's a smoother sound. It's a more jazzy sound. And so on, where that other one is just raw. It's almost like they were in a small room, like you said, what they might have been doing at that time, either in New York or somewhere else. And he says that in 78, 79, this is my snapshot kind of album of what was happening at this time, like you said, in New York, whatever. Right. And we'll never go back to it.
Have you seen him in concert, Bob? I'm sure you have.
You know, he came to Winnipeg last year.
I was
and
there.
I had a friend that bought, were you there?
I was there.
And I had a manager out at Esso here in Brandon actually was able to get two tickets. And he took a guy from Carberry. He offered me. He knew. He goes, well, why don't you go with them? And I said, no. And it just so happened I couldn't go that night anyways. Oh. But, yeah, it would have been pretty special. He's got quite a discography, right? It was good, eh?
Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. So.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm envious.
I appreciate when artists, you know, they're into something and then they take themselves out and then they kind of reimagine things. And I know there's an album like that coming up on this list. And I remember the first time it's come up before, and it totally took this band out and away from what everybody was used to. So yeah, it's kind of a neat thing for artists to do.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny you mentioned that, Clifton, because Max says that a lot too. Like Max, Max pretty cerebral. Like he likes to know the stuff behind the tunes, and he likes to know how artists have changed and so on that. Mm-hmm. So those are things that like he and I talk about a lot as well, as just how they've kind of the evolution of music.
I think it is one of Max's albums that I'm kind of referring to. That
you
know, shucks,
this band here.
Well, let's hear what the kid has to say. Which one is Clifton talking about?
Oh, I'm glad you said kid.
Yeah, we can start with that one. We which one are you thinking of there? We can start talking about.
Well,
that
here's my thoughts. Is everybody kind of knows Radiohead, but if they were to listen to Kid A, they would go, "What? This is Radiohead?"
Yeah, exactly. Because then the first three albums there were so kind of rock sounding, even like OK Computer a bit. It's kind of, it was a bit off the wall, but still it kind of, it really was rooted in kind of that sound. But then Kid A was so much more electronic and stuff that it's kind of, I know obviously that came away before I was born, but if I was kind of accustomed to that earlier sound and I heard that, it would have been totally kind of a curveball. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I really kind of, speaking of how it kind of changes artists too, like a lot of my favorite like projects from them, like I'd say it might have even changed since I made this list here, but I think In Rainbows by them would be one of my favorites. And then like comparing that, which is like 2007, to some of their like earlier, some of their 90s stuff, is like night and day completely. And I kind of, yeah, I really see what you were talking about there with how it kind of, that really changed, I guess, kind of the sound of the band. And yeah, that's kind of why it's my favorite by them, at least, and why it's so high on my list, just because I kind of, I really appreciate like the stylistic changes in there, kind of that you wouldn't be accustomed to with kind of bands like an earlier sound like that.
Cool. This is one of our return albums. We've had Kid A on our list before.
I was looking there yesterday and I saw it on there. I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, well, we we cover everything, so
yeah,
we were kind of expecting something at some point along the way. So
yeah,
lyrically, so lyrically on this album, what happened was they took an approach where they kind of went through magazines and cut up words and kind of just put them in a hat, laid them out, you know, spilled them out onto a table and went at it, just piecing things together.
Yeah, like the first track, I know the first time I listened to it, I think it was Everything in Its Right Place. It was it just kind of, even just the lyrics, like you were saying there, it was says it's Kid A four times and Everything four times, In Its Right Place four times. And it says Yesterday I Woke Up Sucking a Lemon, which as even as it's one of my favorite albums of this day, I still have no clue what that means. I really kind of just like some of the, that's a good question. Yeah, yeah.
But I mean,
yeah, I really kind of like the off the wall.
They're really pushing the artistry here on this one. So this album also, when you talk about genres, they call it, you know, there's a bunch of things that they call it, ambient music, but electronic music. But one of the things they do call it is 20th century classical music. So, yeah. Oh.
Wow. That's interesting.
Interesting. I want to know, Mac, how you got into Radiohead, mm-hmm. or was this one of yours, Bob? That you kind of
That was through me. I'm sure I'm going to claim that one. That was me. No, not at all.
I think one of my friends that actually was just he was a really big fan of OK Computer by Radiohead, and then I had listened to that and just kind of I'd really like it, so I started kind of delving into the rest of their catalog there, and now it's one of my favorite bands because I really liked everything I've heard from them. So yeah, it's kind of through other people there. Nice. But
I think it's great that the younger generation is able to go back and listen to some of these and be aware of them. Gives me some hope.
the majority of the stuff kind of lately, even that I've been listening to, when we get on to kind of what we've been listening to lately, I've got a few more there that I wish I could have fit on my list.
Yep.
But there's so many classic albums that I wish a lot of people, like more people my age, would kind of go and give that stuff a chance, because there's so many good albums out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if, the music has changed so much. I mean, when Bob and I were growing up, we basically got, radio out of Brandon, and if the weather was right, you could get 92 out of Winnipeg, right? So but these days,
yeah, that's right.
Everyone's got the world at their fingertips on their phone, and you can listen to anything at any point in time. It's you're kind of almost left to your own devices, to seek out what music interests you. Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy that I was born in the time I was, because I have so much like. I can literally listen to basically anything with streaming services and kind of the stuff available to me these days. So it's almost like it's completely free to check it out too. So even like if I find something new I really like, I can listen to quite literally everything attached to that if I wanted to. which I'm really grateful for that, because there's so many just things kind of that I can like just learn about, and I really like that.
Not only can you listen to it, but you can have it go on, and then you can jump on Wikipedia and read all about it too, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's the most fun.
It is.
Yeah, that's the most fun.
you can spend. Yeah. Just the other night, I got listening to some old John Mellencamp stuff, and I'd forgotten how good some of his stuff was, and reading about his albums and stuff like that that just you never had a chance to before. Before, all you had was the.
No.
And when the 8-track, you didn't even have anything to look at, did you, Bob? All you had was the...
No, nothing at all. Nothing all you could hear was two... Like, you're listening to a song and a half at the same time. That's about all you had, right? Or you turned, like you were saying, Cam, you turned on Brandon and KX96 there. And you had a choice. You either heard Phil Collins at the time.
Yeah.
Or you could hear Genesis. And then you figured out that, hey, those voices sound very much the same. I couldn't believe it. I get one or the other through Brandon.
Yeah.
And that was about the extent, right? Or you had the liner notes, right? You'd take the liner notes out and you would get a little bit of information, but not as much as you ever wanted to.
No, you'd have to buy
the magazine. Yep. And that's, I remember having to do that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Rolling Stone was big at that time still.
Yeah.
Remember buying
Rolling Stone? I bought a lot of Hit Paraders, I think, in my day. A lot of hair metal type stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so over back to you, Bob. Let's move on to another pick.
Sure. I think the next one I'm going to talk about is Kate Bush. Okay. And it's called The Hounds of Love.
Yep.
Comes from about, I'd say about 1985.
85 when it was released. Yeah.
Right. And I think it says a lot about my first couple of years of university. Again, it was probably first or second year university. And I'd never heard anything quite like it. And the big song on it was Running Up That Hill. There were a couple other ones. Hounds of Love was also a big song, and Cloud Bustin' and so on like that. But I couldn't figure out, because I had heard rumors right off the bat that this woman, not only did she do it, did she make the album, but she did it all herself.
Oh, was that right?
At the time, she had a romantic interest. His name was Del Palmer, and he was the bass player. So I guess they kind of worked together. But after a while, she had found one of those, I think at the time, what was really popular was the Fairlight synthesizing things that Stevie Wonder was kind of into. Peter Gabriel was into at the time. Mm-hmm. And it allowed her to go ahead and pretty well... ape sort of any sort of instrument that was on there, and she did it all. And I thought, as I heard it, and I knew that it was really popular, and looking more into it, and like we were saying, reading Rolling Stone magazine and knowing that about her, I just thought it was really quite amazing. I thought this was her first, I thought this was her debut album,
right?
And yet she had been out for a few years. She'd had an early hit with something called Wuthering Heights, and it was a big song. And then you took a look and you're trying to do the math based on how old she was, and she was only 16 years of age and had a number one hit or number two hit with this great big thing. But Hounds of Love just sounded really cool to me, and it was split up into two parts. The first half of by this time it was a cassette, it wasn't an 8-track anymore. That the first half had kind of the five hits on it, and they were kind of radio friendly. Yeah. Then the second half was a suite about somebody that was out on the sea and floating across the sea, and kind of, I believe, drowns or gets stuck under the ice.
Yeah.
And then it's the idea of that death and rebirth sort of idea. And if you put your earphones on or whatever at that time and listen to the B part, it was just really surreal to me. I hadn't heard anything like it. So you got that, and you also got the big hits on the front five. It was really cool. And a woman that did all the producing and everything on her own stuff, I thought it was very original at the time. There weren't a lot doing that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's certainly easier now to do that type of thing with the technology that we have. But 85, that would have been unusual, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
In 2020, I don't know if you know this, but in 2020, Rolling Stone, because you mentioned Rolling Stone magazine, but they ranked Hounds of Love as 68th. Greatest album of all time.
Isn't that crazy, eh?
That's crazy. Yeah, 68.
That's pretty cool of all time. I know Mac and I have been talking about it a little bit with 68. I'm a big, as you'll soon find out, I'm a big Elton John fan, and with everything that he's got, even the one that I love the most has fallen to 112, which is a crime, by the way. Yeah, hers being 68, I think it's great.
Cool. You know? It'd be like interesting.
Radiohead. How?
Yeah, we should, Clifton, we should have a look at that list, top 100, and see how many of the albums that we've covered are on that list.
Interesting. Yeah, I bet you there's cool. quite a bit. Yeah, for
I
sure.
I would think so.
Yeah, definitely.
I have to admit, Bob, I listened to this. We were going to do this episode a couple weeks ago, and so I thought I was prepared, and I think I listened to this one, and I honestly had just a vague recollection of the big hit, but other than that, this was all new to me.
Right. Yeah. And I think to a lot of people too, I know at the time it really hit home with college students, mm-hmm. you know, so I don't think at the time anybody that was going, it was in high school or junior high or somebody that was in their 40s at that time, that was probably coming out of the 60s or 70s, right. thought of it as something crazy. But yeah, I was surprised I put it on the list. There's times when I'm thinking, wow, is that supposed to be on there? But it's one I always go back to. And it's one where, you know, if you do your playlists, it comes up on, you know, on shuffle and that kind yeah. of, oh yeah, I remember how great that is. Mm-hmm. And it's just followed me for what, since 1986. So what's that? 40 years. Holy smokes, 40 years ago.
Do you still have the original cassette or have you upgraded?
I have the cassette and I do yeah. have it. I've downloaded it off iTunes.
Nice. Yeah,
but I don't have the album. I don't have the album. Yeah.
Okay, let's move. Let Mac, but over to you.
Yeah, well, I guess all for my next one, I'll go with "Wish You Were Here" by Pink Floyd. Came on 75 there. This was kind of when I was kind of starting to look back into some like older music. This was kind of one of the first ones that I was really listening to like a lot. And I think the first time I listened to it, I was really impressed that, hold on, I have it right here. The first song is 13 minutes long. Yeah. Yep. And I kind of just being someone who was born into kind of, I guess most of the music that I hear nowadays is kind of like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes long. Yep. So kind of the first time I listened to this, I was really kind of taken back with how long some of the songs were. But they don't waste a second on the album at all. Every second like seemed like there's like a real kind of purpose to it. And wow. that intro is one of my favorite like from any album I've ever heard. Yeah. And then of course, like "Wish You Were Here," like the biggest song on it's amazing, as well as kind of the two in between there. Then the outro kind of plays off the first track, which I really liked. And yeah, I really kind of, this album's like a cinematic experience more than music almost. It's really,
that's
really
a good
cool.
way of putting it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of every time I come back to this, it's
cool. I have to admit, I'm kind of a latecomer to Pink Floyd, and this is certainly one. I have it downstairs now on vinyl, and you're right. This is it's a great piece. I like the where they actually had a recordings before called Household Objects, and they just basically made sounds with just weird things from around their house kind of thing. And there's all this kind of weird stuff going on all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I kind of, after hearing it, I went through most of Pink Floyd's other albums and stuff. And obviously like Dark Side of the Moon's amazing. Yep. The Wall, Metal, kind of everything else there is so good. But yeah, I think this one just kind of, the first time I heard it was just kind of really special to me, I guess. And I think it's just going to stay like that for a long time, just because it's, I don't know, it's such a cool album. It doesn't sound like much else that I've heard. So yeah, that's why it's so important to me there.
It's in 2012, it was 211th on the 500 greatest albums of all time.
Huh.
So it's nice. I mean, if you make the list big enough, 500.
Yeah.
That'll be on. Yeah.
I mean, that just goes to show how much great music there is out there when an album like this can, you know, is in
the
it's, you know, it's, I agree with you that it's a great album. I think Roger Waters might have sort of contributed the most, I think, to this album. And I think it might be even a sort of how do you do to the Syd Barrett, who was a founding member of Pink Floyd. And he had left for deteriorating health reasons. And
I think
the first song right off the bat, the 13-minute one, Shine On, You Crazy Diamond, I think is exactly a tribute to Syd Barrett.
And there's a story too that Syd showed up when they were recording this and showed up in the studio, and none of them everyone kind of looked around like it was kind of one of those, do you know this guy? Who's he with kind of, right? And David Gilmour finally realized who it was and like said, oh, that's Sid, you guys, kind of thing, right? And he kind of did a couple things and then just...
And he'd been in the band. Yeah.
Disappeared. And then they didn't see him again for years and years and years kind of thing.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, I never heard that before.
Oh, yeah. Well, Google that one up. It's quite a story, yeah.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to.
I think that I have Welcome to the Machine as one of my alarm songs that I wake up to every once in a while.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob, how much of an influence do you think you were on Mac with these two albums here? Like, I mean, we joked about Radiohead, but I mean, Pink Floyd, were you...
You know, Dark Side of the Moon, I think Mac and I have talked about a little bit, right? As just being like, you know, the sound, the song Money and so on like that, but the great gig in the sky and the solo that's in it, the woman's solo that's in it and so on. So, you know, just throwing that out there. But Mac's pretty independent when he comes, when it comes to music, he's very accepting of what I listen to, surprisingly.
Yeah.
You know, and yet on the other hand, he does. I know he's getting ready to go and do his driver's test, and when we're doing driving in the car, he'll make sure that he plays something that both of us can appreciate. And I said, "Oh, this is great! You drive around with your friends, you're listening." He goes, "Oh, Dad, this is a completely different, you know, sound list." So he's all over the board, which is really amazing. Like, that's, I think, cool. It's really cool. So he's also had quite an influence, and he sends me a lot of things too, right? And he'll just go ahead and text me something new, so I can get, and I get caught up in some of it, like.
Oh, yeah.
So cool. I think we've had about the same amount of influence on each other, I think. But you're right, the older music, it's nice to kind of give those more personal stories.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, I was here, or this came from here, or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm going to keep an eye on the clock here. I'm going to be the taskmaster. So you're up, Bob. What's next on the radio here? On the A-track.
on New Gold Dream.
Okay.
New Gold Dream.
Simple Minds,
Simple
right?
Minds. Simple Minds, for sure. And it is an album that I've listened to a lot. And the best part is that their last couple of albums that they've put out in the last 5 years are two of the favorite ones that I still play today over and over again because they are so strong. So they have had kind of a renaissance. But when I go back and I think about what they're known for with, you know, the Breakfast Club song, the Don't You Forget About Me. They didn't write it. It sounds a lot different than anything else that they've had. They got popular and were able to put out Once Upon a Time and get all their hits off of it. But they're almost, when I go back and I read about it, I find that Jim Kerr and Charlie Burchill are almost embarrassed that that's the one that they're known for.
Oh, wow.
Right? It brought them out there, but it's not indicative. So the one, two, just before that came out, with the New Gold Dream, I think is their best one. And it's, again, one that I'll go from beginning to end. And it has like Someone Somewhere in Summertime on it, which was the big hit on it. But it's got Glittering Prize and it's got Promised You a Miracle, some minor hits and so on it. Mm-hmm. But it's just, again, the idea, again, they do use some synthesizer, but Burchill is such a great guitar player. And that to be able to hear that with Kerr's voice, they really much mirror each other. They really complement each other a lot. And I know that was one that my brother passed along to me and he didn't want it. Again, this is on LP. This was not, he didn't throw me the E-track tape this time. He actually threw me an LP and you would take it out and everything is pink and gold on it. And you took it out and it had is it acetate or is that what it's made of? Is that the name for the actual disc? Yeah. And it's all red and pink.
Oh yeah.
So that was the first time I got one rather than black one. Yeah. This one is there. So it was from the get-go, it was interesting to play, right? You put it on the turntable and it almost shimmered in the sun, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't disappoint when I put it on and I listened to all the songs on it too. And before that, their sound was really different when they were starting off in Britain and in Ireland or Scotland or, you know, wherever they originated there. I didn't even understand their music. I went back and listened to some of those. But there's that gravitation to a different kind of sound again.
Yeah, evolving band.
Right.
I don't know where this is on the all-time list. I don't think I came across it. But
it made number three on the charts at the time, but
right.
Of all time, but it is, and this book has come up before in another podcast, and actually forgot about it. I wanted to look into it, and it might make a good stocking stuffer for the music aficionado. Oh. But it's 1001 albums you must hear before you die.
Yes,
and before you die, right?
Yes, yeah. So it's an album that compiles writings and information on albums, and different critics have contributed to it. So 1001 albums you must hear before you die.
Send that to my family, yeah. Clifton. Send that link to my family.
How many copies do you need?
Why? Yeah.
It's only a month from Christmas.
Clifton mentioned another podcast there. So I want to just do a shout out to a new podcast that I've discovered recently called Scam Time. And these are two ladies from out in Alberta, and they're doing a brand new podcast. They started about the same time as us. Again, it's called Scam Time. It's kind of cool. They talk about Ponzi schemes, but my favorite is when they talk about the scammers that call you by phone and that kind of thing, right? So I enjoyed a couple of their episodes. So if someone out in our listening land is looking for I don't know how funny we are, but if you're looking for something a little bit funnier, you can check out these ladies on Scam Time. And I know they
as long as downloads. We think we're funny, right? Yeah. As long as we think we're funny, we're fine.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what matters.
I'll post the link on our website, but you can check it out. So Scam Time. Okay, cool. Sounds great, Bob. I'm going to have to go back and listen to more Simple Minds. I think I did get a couple of songs into this one here, but when you got a list of 10 to get through, it was a challenge to.
Yeah, oh,
for sure. Time to do all that. let's go back to Mac here and see. And now he's got his list is all over the place, and we've certainly seen lots of that.
Yeah,
this is definitely a stretch, much stretchier than
mine. I think the next one I was gonna. I think the next one I was gonna talk about was "Pinata" by Freddie Gibbs and Madlib.
Okay.
Because that one I've been listening to a lot recently too. And when I was making the list, it was kind of, they have another, this duo also has another one that came out last year. I was kind of deciding between the two because I like them both a lot. But I just kind of objectively think this one's better. It sounds like if like Scarface, like The Godfather or something, like one of those gangster movies was like turned into an album, I guess. That's the best way I have to kind of describe how I feel about it. But the beats just sound so... I don't know, the beats kind of perfectly convey kind of that feeling and that vibe of just kind of the environment, I guess, that like Freddie kind of talks about being in through the music. And it really just kind of, I found the album actually after watching The Godfather for the first time. So it just really clicked for me there, because I was already kind of in that mindset. But it's kind of, the producer is one of my favorites of all time. He's worked with a bunch of other kind of big hip-hop legends, and Freddie Gibbs is one of my favorite rappers of all time. So this one kind of, it was kind of really I knew this was going to be put on my top five when we were making this, just because it's a really special album to me.
Cool. I'm going to guess, though, that it's not on your Driving with Dad list.
It's the first song that comes across.
No, yeah.
Yeah,
I love it. It's hard. It's hard to dance to.
Does Rob Zombie make the Driving with Dad list at all?
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's awesome. I can't wait till they make the movie about the Flyers.
We were joking about we don't do video, but maybe we should get Mac to put this on and we can get a little video of Bob dancing to.
My gosh!
See how that goes.
Anytime, I'm ready. It'll be an early Christmas gift. An early Christmas gift to you.
Oh boy.
Well, I can't say that I listened to this one. I checked out a couple of tracks, not really my thing. And with 10 to go, I just said,
it's not for everybody, but it's kind of
that's fair. Yeah. But I definitely think it's cool how you got this kind of wide range of things that you'll listen to. And I think everybody needs to do that, right? And they certainly don't need to be
kind of
overlapping, right? But everyone's got their own little diagram of stuff. And if you can find something that kind of meets in the middle kind of thing, then that's great. You have something.
It was my number six, by the way.
Oh, yeah? On your
It didn't quite make a list.
When he picked it, you were glad because that meant you could.
Yeah, we could talk about it.
I could put it in my 10 cents. I hadn't thought about that. When I got Tanner on last week, I should have had him make his list and we could have just done that. Should have thought about that clip. Mm-hmm. It went long enough, that's for sure. Okay. Have you ever seen these guys in concert, Mac, or anything? Or
I've not, no. I haven't heard of them coming kind of anywhere near here. And then even kind of since I have really got into this album and kind of the artists themselves, it was kind of already really into kind of the COVID times. So I really couldn't go if I wanted to.
Not too many people have been to a concert.
I'd love to if I could, though.
Yeah. Cool. Well, no. Fingers crossed, right? So.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Okay. So Bob, let's go back to one of your picks there.
All right, let's go Canadiana. Gotta go. Okay. Tragically Hip Tragically and Fully Hip. Completely. So it's one of those ones where, you know, like everybody seems to be a Hip fan in Canada, right? And you go, and everybody's been able to kind of track them through their, you know, their rise up and their, and ultimately with him passing and so on like that. That, you know, we kind of miss them, but that it seems of all the albums that are out there for the Tragically Hip, Fully Completely is the one that is fully and completely the one that's in my heart when I go back and I want to listen to something from the Hip. There's so much from the Hip I want to hear, but with this one, again, from beginning to end, it's so strong. Like, you know, when you think about the songs, I think the first single was Locked in the Trunk of a Car. Mm-hmm. And you listen to it and say, wow, that's a good rocker. That's fantastic. And then you found out it was about a guy that had murdered somebody and stuck the body in the trunk of a car and was making sure the helicopters couldn't. He drives into the bushes, right, and buries it somewhere. And you're kind of looking, it goes, oh, geez, I like that song, but should I like that song? And the other ones, you know, like the Wheat King song, like the ballad on it, and David Milgaard and so on like that. I teach grade 6 post-Confederation social studies. So when you start thinking about, I love that. I love Canadian history and all of that stuff. And for him to bring it up and put it in such a musical form to put it across, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. 50 Mission Cap about Billy Barilko and so on like that. And you know, and all of that. And what was the other 100
Meridian?
Ooh. Meridian too. Yep. And that's kind of the divide, right? The divide between Western Canada and Eastern Canada and how we kind of perceive things. And it just goes on from there, right? Hugh McLennan song, the Courage song. There's a little bit of something for everybody. And yet my song, I think, is, again, it's a softer song. It's Pigeon Camera too.
Oh yeah.
About putting cameras in the back of pigeons during World War I, and they'd fly around and do reconnaissance. Right. You know, it was rock and roll, the finest form. And the guy was such a wordsmith. Right. And he also wanted to put his facts across. And I just thought it's a complete Canadian album. And I just love it to pieces.
Can you imagine? So, he would have made a fantastic teacher, I think.
I think so too, right? He would be spellbinding, right? Spellbinding.
Absolutely.
He really would have.
You know, I've heard it described as meat and potatoes rock and roll. And you know, I'm a meat and potatoes rock and roll kind of guy. So,
yes.
All of the head stuff really. Yeah, it gets.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I agree, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, every Canadian that we've had a non-Canadian on our list here, but I mean, you would think that if we gave every Canadian 100 albums, that there would be at least one or two Hip albums on there.
You would think so.
Yeah.
And I know personally, Cam, like that's when I was kind of more associated with you and we were staying in the house in Winnipeg and stuff. And we'd go to Roadside Attraction and see those guys and just watch him. He was like Jim Morrison. He was a Canadian Jim Morrison, right?
Yeah.
You couldn't take your hands. He's walking on the speakers and he's, you know, doing this and that, just a bizarre soul, but as it turned out, we found out he was really a marvelous soul for so many, like the indigenous people and so on as well. He was just, he was who he said he was.
Yeah, for sure. I was just trying to figure that out before we started recording here. I was at the Roadside Attraction concert with Midnight Oil. Were you there with me that night, Bob?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I think so. That might have been one of the ones that we were at.
So that's probably how I got home then, was with you.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure. I think we walked 10 and a half miles to the south end of Winnipeg.
You must have been the roadside attraction on the way home.
There's a very good chance
you're the bigger attraction.
Okay, so we pose this question. We pose this question, Bob, about if the Tragically Hip is sort of Canada's band of the 90s and the 2000s and whatnot, and Midnight Oil is kind of considered to be Australia's answer, or Australia's, maybe not answer, but Australia's version of the Tragically Hip, that band that mm-hmm. everybody loves and everything, but it never really sort of, you know, people know about but aren't passionate about.
Yeah.
Is there an American band that is their version of the Tragically Hip?
Is rooted. I wouldn't know, like, you know, that's a great question. CCR, maybe, or somebody, you know, like where they got pretty popular, you know, and Fogarty had his singles career after that with Centerfield and so on. But they were kind of rootsy, right? Whatever, it was a certain sound. It did seem to, I don't know. I don't know. Who would you think?
We couldn't come up with one, could we, Clifton? Really?
Yeah, you know what? Now that I've thought about this a little bit, I think now in America, I think you can probably put quite a few bands on that list, and I really like the CCR because Gord Downie wasn't—I don't think—necessarily singing from a lot of personal experience, but he was taking the Canadian experience.
Right.
And that's what John Fogarty did.
That's true. Yep.
He took the experience from the Bayou and, you know, he put that into a rock and roll form and really ran with it and did a great job.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, Clifton. Mm-hmm. And the fact US is so big that the sounds that came out of different parts of the United States were so different. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you think about maybe the West Coast, maybe you have to talk about the Eagles a little bit more, or, you know, I like Los Lobos. So, going down along the southern part of, you know, that's a great question.
I love that question.
That's a toughie.
We don't have an answer. I wanted to ask you because we kind of.
Oh, I was going to ask you. Yeah. What is the final answer on that one? No idea. Your hands up.
No idea. But you're absolutely right. This hip album is, I mean, it is, when you said it that way, it is literally fully, completely. If you only had one hip album, mm-hmm. you would have gotten it all from this album, right? Like,
if you were
completely unaware of anything else, you would listen to that and you'd go, yeah, I get the hip, right? Like, but
exactly. Yeah.
That must be why it's referred to as the meat and potatoes.
The meat and potatoes. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The meat and potatoes.
Before you get dessert, you got to have your meat and potatoes first.
Ooh, a little Pink Floyd reference there. Very nice.
Yeah, just a little.
Well, we could talk forever about the Tragically Hip. There's no doubt about that. I can tell you stories. Clifton can as well. If you want to hear all Tragically Hip, go back a couple episodes and listen to that episode.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Let's fire it back to Mac here. He's got a couple left.
Yeah.
Who left?
Guess next I'll go with one of my favorite, of all time, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye West. It's kind of, I really, even like, he's one of my favorite artists now, but he took me so long to get into. Just, he's such a kind of a polarizing figure, just because anywhere you look, you just see negative things about him. And I just really like this album really took his perspective of that, because it was kind of, he most of this album's recordings and stuff were done in 1 year after there was the whole big VMAs incident where he took the microphone from Taylor Swift there and everyone's kind of hated him.
Has it been that long?
He's done.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's been 10 years. But so he went out to Hawaii basically for a year, and he just kind of, he flew all the artists he wanted out there. And then they were just, he just worked kind of from that remote place so that he kind of had that isolation. And I really think he made his best album out of it. And there's so many songs on here. Like Runaway is one of my favorite songs of all time. Gorgeous is like, I could listen to just the lyrics and kind of process everything on that for hours on end. Like there's not one song on here that I would take off. And I really kind of, I think it's one of the best albums I've ever heard. And I have the album for this one at home. It's over at my other place there, and yeah. It was like the first one I bought just because I love this album so much. And cool. Yeah, I really think it was probably one of the best things I've ever heard, in my personal opinion.
It's won a Grammy, and it was released in 2010, so I'm guessing it won the Grammy the following year. I'm not sure. Best rap album, and BET hip hop album CD of the year as well. So it's certainly got some reputation that way, right?
And kind of when you look at all the lists of, I'm not sure where it places on the Rolling Stone one, but any of those kind of individual like best hip hop albums of all time lists, right. It's kind of that one, Illmatic by Nas, and To Pimp a Butterfly by Kendrick Lamar, are kind of the three that are always in those like very kind of top slots there.
Right.
And I really think it kind of, it deserves all the praise it gets. But mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. He really is, I like to consider him sort of like an anti-hero, where, you know, he's not very
popular. Me too.
In the way that he goes about his business, but I think that he contributes well to culture and music, and even things in our everyday lives, like trying to run for president and just things up that way. So
we would have been lucky.
Yeah.
He's certainly not shy of speaking up, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No.
You gotta give him credit for speaking his mind, I think. So
Yeah, and I think kind of even with all the insane things that he does, you can't deny he's really talented when it comes to the music. And I like this one line that he has. It's in highlights off of the album The Life of Pablo by him. He says, "Name one genius that ain't crazy." And I really like how he's kind of, he knows there's something up there, but he knows that he's skilled too. I like that.
I like that line too, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
that actually sounds like something your dad would say.
Oh, I'm gonna plead the fifth on that one.
have you gotten into any of Mac's newer picks, Bob? Like, have you listened to any of this? Do you put on Kanye West when he's not around?
When he's not, and dance to it? Yeah, I certainly do. There's a little bit, like, you see him out there, you know, some of the songs. I like watching the videos as well, because he tries to, you know, the words, paint a picture. So his videos are also very either bizarre, or there are some songs out there and I don't know them enough to actually quote the title of the song.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm right on that outer edge of it. But there are some I'm kind of, wow, no, that makes, Max sent one to me about 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago. Through this COVID thing, I've lost track of time, but
yeah.
And it was just a beautiful song. And like Matt was saying,
beam, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I just thought it was, yeah, there's really some, so just trying to keep an open mind. And yep. He tends to do that. He tends to do that as well for me. So.
Cool. Sorry. I forgot to mention on this album too, there's the one that it was a little connection between Dad and I there. Cause then on All of the Lights and All of the Lights interlude, Elton John actually plays the piano, and he composed a decent amount of that song and some other things on the album too, which kind of is just a little fun note that I wanted to add.
Cool.
That is
a connection. Huh?
Yeah, it's really neat.
Well, that's a great segue into your last pick, Bob, I think. Then.
Oh, it is. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, there we are.
Thanks, Mac, for that. I do appreciate
that. Am I right? We've got one left? Yeah.
Yeah, there is. And I think of all the ones and so on like that, I kind of left it last, but the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album by Elton John, for me, has always, it again came from my brother growing up.
Oh yeah.
And maybe not as much listening to the entire album, but you kind of knew, I was just old enough, you know, 74, 75, 76 there, to catch the end of when he was super fantastic and big.
Right.
And I it's one of those albums that doesn't have a bad track on it. And mm-hmm. I went back last night and I read the original Rolling Stone review of it. Oh, and there's about three or four guys mm-hmm. that say close, but not.
Oh yeah.
It's close, but it's not good. You know, it's not, he's trying to do something here. We don't know what it is. He's trying really hard to get a good band in the hole, but I mean, the hits speak for themselves, right?
Absolutely.
I think of It's a double album, and the first side, The Funeral for a Friend, which is the great big long 11-minute one that leads into Love Lies Bleeding, is followed, and it's amazing. Mac even listened to it about 3 or 4 weeks ago and thought, yeah, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
And that leads on that side, that leads into Candle in the Wind, you know, which everybody knows, like three different times coming out as a single and so on, and the Lady Di connection and so on. And then he slowed down a bit and only put out Benny and the Jets as the last one on that side.
Yeah.
You know, like that side is just an amazing side. And that wasn't even going to be included as a single, right? He didn't want it as a single. And it ended up being first the number one single on the black charts, right? And the dance charts. So I thought that that was great. You know, and he starts the next one off with Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, which everybody knows. And, you know, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting's on it. And so many deep cuts. And there's so many deep cuts on there as well that I can't even, you know, if you wanted one of my favorite deep cuts, I can't even pick one.
Can't pick one? Pick
four or five. Oh, yeah. You know, it's really, it's just amazing. It's amazing. And it's the one that I'll always go back to when I'm really happy, when maybe I'm a little bit more morose, you know, when I'm more... just one of those ones, and the and the sides do that. You can listen to a side and say, yeah, I want to listen to that side, and it gives you a different feel for it. So
I have to admit, I was I've known Bob for a long time, and I was never an Elton John fan. I heard the songs, and you know, I was probably two or three kind of songs that I liked, kind of thing. But my wife said a year and a half ago, when they announced that Elton John was coming to Winnipeg, said let's go, and she never says let's go to a concert kind of thing. So I said, okay, well, yeah, let's go, right? I mean, he's a legend, right? And holy cow, am I ever glad that we went. Like, I've seen a lot of concerts, and it was just a marvelous show. He was in top form. The show itself was fantastic. Mm-hmm. The band was phenomenal. I just enjoyed watching them all play. And I mean, the ticket price was up high, but it was it was worth it. Holy moly, what a performer.
Yeah, and I'm surprised he's even I'm surprised he's even still alive. You know, when I read the book that came out, and it's just he's had everything. You know, he's been everywhere. He knows everybody. He's had every addiction under the sun, but he's alive and kicking, and somewhere that hits home with people, right? And he's come back from it all. So
yeah, for sure. And I know I know that you've seen him. I'm sure at least once or twice.
And I haven't. And I haven't.
You've never seen him, Bob?
Never seen him, even the times he's been in Winnipeg. Goodness. So, you know, it's one of my big regrets in life, I must say, you know.
Yeah.
Doing that and yeah, I don't even know. I can't even compare it to something else I haven't done. It's one of those things that, you know, I've done it all. I've had I have a great son. I have a job I like, but I've never seen Elton John. So there we go.
Well, thankfully we live in this age now where we can literally find just about anything we want online. So
that's right.
We went to the concert. A friend of mine has a concert DVD. So she lent it to me, and I watched it ahead of time too. And it's not like being there, that's for sure. But certainly an opportunity that we can.
Yeah.
I'll take it out.
And it is the story of my life. Like every album, I can think of an album and say, hey, I was there. Hey, I was in there, that spot, that job. I was growing up then, you know, I that's the one I do it the most with. So, you know, very interesting.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Had all of Bob's, and we could probably talk about Elton John for a whole hour, but we won't. Let's back to Max's last pick.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
Yeah. My final one I got here is In Utero by Nirvana. So I saved it for last, kind of like Dad did there too. I think it's probably my favorite off the list.
Yeah.
But you just can't beat this album for me. It's kind of, I don't know, straight from the start to the finish. I love like every single song on here. And though everyone kind of talks about like Nevermind if you're talking about Nirvana, I just think they improved on every kind of level possible on this one. And it's the perfect kind of final album for them before Kurt passed there. I think it really kind of, they discussed everything they needed to talk about, and kind of, it really gave you a good close look, especially, I think it's really important on just the life of Kurt Cobain himself there, because considering this is the last album that he worked on, like with Nirvana there, it really kind of gives you a look into his head and where he was at before he passed there. Mm-hmm. And I think kind of just a lot of the songs on here, they talk about what the band kind of is like, what's expected of them, and kind of how the fame is kind of affecting all of them.
Yeah.
And I really think that really played a kind of a lot of what they talk about on here. I think as sad as it is, it played a big part of kind of the downfall and the passing of Kurt Cobain there. But I think artistically it's amazing. And just kind of, yeah, every single song on here is so, so good. And I think Serve the Servants, like the intro song, might be my favorite Nirvana song of all time. So yeah, no question, this was going to be kind of my number one here on the list.
I was reading here while we were taking our break, and because I'm not overly familiar with this, and but it kind of sounds like the band wasn't, when everything was said and done and the CDs were in the stores, they kind of sounds like they weren't 100% pleased with the final result. Is that what you've seen? Or
yeah, and I think a lot of it was even Kurt Cobain himself, he didn't want to be famous. Yeah. And then I think when he kind of became that big, he wasn't used to all of that yet, because there's even like on Nevermind, he has a song about when he used to live under a bridge. Like he really kind of, he came a long way here. And I guess I think it's just kind of, it was a lot for him to take in. And a lot of the lyrics over here kind of all really talk about that. And it kind of, yeah, the outcome of kind of after the album came out ties into that.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you become a Foo Fighters fan after?
I have, actually. Okay. I've kind of been surrounded by a lot of the Foo Fighters since I was a kid. But yeah, I kind of, though I haven't delved into like all their albums and stuff, obviously like some songs like Everlong and kind of My Hero, it's kind of some of the earlier stuff is so good. Yeah, it's kind of having Dave Grohl being like a part of Nirvana, I was really, I'm happy, I guess, that kind of as a kid, I was exposed to that, because kind of it even got me accustomed to the sound a bit before even looking into Nirvana myself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even Dave Grohl has even said that he claims the Foo Fighters is dad rock and roll.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
So true.
They're probably the one band that I've been influenced by my son is probably the Foo Fighters, and I've listened to them. He's a big Foo Fighters fan. We watched a concert just last weekend. They were streaming from a place in the States, so we paid the $1 ticket and watched it from the States. Kind of hanging.
I like how they kind of almost stopped touring because of that Mentos song, right? And they'd go up on stage and they'd start playing, and everybody thought it was really cool to throw Mentos up on stage. And he goes, I'd come off of there and I'd have bruises all over my body, and I almost lost an eye.
I don't know that story.
That's terrible. You're telling me about that, though.
He said it with some profanity for sure. I wish they'd stop throwing that.
He's not afraid to swear. Actually, I was watching him the other night. He was on Colbert, and you could tell that he was just about, and he remembered
holding back.
I'm on broadcast here. I'm gonna throw it over to Clifton now, so he's gonna do both you guys the what order question.
Okay, so here you guys are. You've got your picks, you're in quarantine, and you're about to go through and listen. So what album do you start with? How do you go through these albums? What album do you end with?
I've changed my list here. The one I had on my computer for the top five there, it's different now, but I have the other one written down on my phone somewhere. I'll just bring it up here. Okay, yeah. So I think I'd go with In Utero first, just because I can listen to that album any time of the day. And it's just kind of, yeah, that'd be one that would really kind of, when I listen to that, I usually start delving into kind of like looking into stories about the album and the band and stuff like that. And it really kind of gets me thinking. So that one would kind of, that would get me ready to listen to five albums in a row. And then I'd probably maybe Pinata next. Then the Kanye one. Then Radiohead. And then Wish You Were Here, I think. That would probably be my order if I had to go like that. So, yeah. Do you have yours, Dad?
Yeah, I think I do. I'm just kind of looking at them, kind of the same idea. I thought when I presented them, I thought I was going to go in order. But now that I think about them, I think I would put it in a different order. So I would most likely probably start with that Look Sharp one. I think just if I had to go somewhere, it's so upbeat. I think I would want to start with something like that, kind of a little bit more joyous and so on like that. The New Gold Dream would be number two. Just because it's not far off of the way I presented it, but number two, Hounds of Love, number three, because I think I could just put it on and listen to that B side and really relax and kind of chill out. And then even the last two, it's funny. I always thought that the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road would be the last one I'd listen to, best for last, but I think I'd probably listen to that second last. And then being the good Canadian boy that I am, I would probably listen to Fully Completely last. And they're both albums that have great songs all the way through. But being the Canadian boy, I think I would want to just listen to something about Canada as my very last one, maybe my penultimate one.
You're a patriot, Bob.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so we've got a new segment here where we're going to ask you give us a couple of albums that you might recommend for others. Something new that you've discovered.
Want me to start this time, Mac?
Sure.
You want me to give you a little bit of time?
I'm getting up my recently listened to here on the side with my Apple Music, so you can go first there for sure.
Geez, I'm just trying to think. I know like Mac introduced me to Weekend and Canadian, of course, but really good. And for somebody that's had a lot of success lately and so on like that, I've listened to a number of the songs since he sent it along to me. And I really enjoy it. Like I just find it's well-crafted and I really like his voice. Excuse me. I really like his voice as well. So I would recommend Weekend for something that's so maybe commercial right now. It's commercial with quality. And one that I got with kind of a harder rock sound is Volbeat. And Volbeat is hard rock. And it's something that kind of, I watched it. There was a video on TV on one of the video channels and I saw this song and the video that went along with it, along with the song, almost made me tear up. It was really upbeat, but it was a real inspirational song. And I think it was right at the beginning of COVID and everything. Right. So I went, I gave it a shot. And I took three of the songs off, bought them individually. Then I bought five. I said, oh, those are good too. And then I ended up buying the whole thing and just thought that it was really good. Again, I can't remember the name of it, but Volbeat is the band and whatever their last one is, cool. Is good. And like I had said, almost at the very start, when we started talking with the Simple Minds, Simple Minds' last one, is just incredible, and it's about 2 years old now. And then I actually saw it was on PBS, and they ended up having their live concert on PBS, and they still have the stage, their backing performers, and so on. And the songs were as good as they were in their prime, I think. Okay, a little bit, you know, I'm reminiscing a little bit, and. Yep. But I thought the last two by New Simple Minds are really good, a really good choice.
Cool. Okay. Mac, what do you got?
All right. Well, my first one here, actually, I was looking at some of the other podcasts there and I saw someone was talking about In the Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel.
Oh yeah.
And, I really do like that album, but then, I think when people think about that band, they kind of, that's the only album they really think about. Yeah. But their first album, On Avery Island, is actually, that one's really good. I've been listening to that a lot recently. So that would be one, just because it's a band that a fair amount of people know, but kind of that album is kind of unappreciated in my eyes.
Okay.
Then I've been listening to Elliot Smith by Elliot Smith a lot lately. I really like that album. And I guess, yeah, honestly, I wish I had more friends that listened to Elliot Smith so I could just talk about him more. So that's one. And then lastly, I would give, I'd say Hyperview by Tidal Fight. It's, so I can't remember who it was, some artist I like just kind of mentioned that band. So I started looking into them and they kind of have like a Nirvana-y sound, but it's more kind of shoegazy mixed with it. I don't know. It's really cool. But, I really, yeah, I'd say those three are kind of my recommendation.
Okay, nice. Well, we've got lots of, there's lots of music out there to listen to. And so it's, yeah, it's kind of neat to get recommendations.
I don't know if Cam remembers, but we had brought up Volbeat and jam sessions with Revolving Doors. So we were trying to figure out a way to sort of change up Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash. And we've done this, I think, with a couple other songs where we kind of where we kind of punk them up. And so I brought the idea that, you know, we would try and play it in the style of Volbeat's. I believe the song's called Dead Man's Tongue.
Yep. Yeah.
And so very hard rock Johnny Cash sounding tune. And that's probably exactly the influence that they got from and how they came up with it. But I don't know if it worked out so well for us, but
I think we remember that. No, we tried it, I think, but yeah. I mean, we haven't really had a practice session in quite a while. So,
yeah. I'd love to hear you guys do Die to Live. I think there's one called Die to Live. I think it would be really good. I think one of the Volbeat ones is Die to Live. I'd love to hear you guys try that one.
Okay.
Well, we should definitely put it on the list. Yeah, going back to Meat and Potatoes, if you want to check out Chris Shiflett and, again, the guitar player for Fighters, West Coast Stories, I've listened to the album West Coast Stories. Yeah, he's got another one called Hard Lessons. I haven't really got into that.
It's good, too.
Check
it out. Oh, nice. Yeah. Oh, good. Chris Shiflett. Thanks for the recommendation.
It's not Foo Fighters, and it's definitely not Nirvana, but
cool.
Okay, well, this has been really a lot of fun. For our first, well, I won't say it's our first father someone because we did one with Tanner last weekend, but it was kind of all about me. So this is the first time we've had the parent child kind of double shot kind of thing. So we're branching out, and it's been great. I knew it would be, and it would be interesting to hear sort of the influence that you have on one another. So it's been a lot of fun.
Mm. Yeah, cool. Yeah, it's always very positive. Right. I always have a very good influence on my son. until I don't.
Well, I think you've done really well, Bob. Put it
awesome. So far, so good.
Yeah. Thanks again, guys.
Yeah, you betcha. Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This has been fabulous.
It's been really entertaining.